HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 391, recorded live Thursday, September 26th, 2013. This episode of Hansel Minutes is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, makers of GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Raquel Velez about controlling robots with JavaScript and Node.js.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I'm talking again to Raquel Velez. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing really well, thanks.
We're going to talk about robots. We talked about Node a little bit last time and kind of like getting people started in Node. And then I go and I look at nodebots.io and I blink, and the next thing I know, you're controlling robots with JavaScript.
Yeah, that's pretty much right.
So getting involved in robots for me seems very intimidating. It seems like I'm not going to be smart enough. There's going to be some C involved. I've overwritten all of those brain cells with other information. All my C-related brain cells are gone.
Of course, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, those were brain cells that I used in college, and now they're, I don't know what they have on them now. My phone number.
Right.
And I seem to see when I look around on like Hacker News and some of the forums that there's kind of mixed feelings about doing kind of control systems and hardware with JavaScript. There are some people who feel very strongly that this is a bad thing. And then there are
always
other things that feel that this is really the best thing that could ever happen. Like suddenly the language that we can hack on in Notepad and JavaScript is now letting us control robots. So why JavaScript?
Why JavaScript? So the major question that I like to ask is why not JavaScript? So the thing about JavaScript is that it's really prevalent, and especially amongst web developers. If you're doing any front-end code, you know JavaScript. If you're a Node developer, you're obviously doing JavaScript. JavaScript is really easy to pick up. It's really easy to use. And people just love it. And the fact of the matter is, I've been a roboticist for about 12 years now. So I've seen it all from C++ to Python. And now I'm using JavaScript for my robots. And the reason I do it is not because it's going to make my robot faster or stronger or smarter necessarily, but more about just bringing robotics to more people. You don't have to be a C developer or a Python developer to build robots anymore. And you shouldn't have to be. It's about having the opportunity to just say, all right, let's use what we know, and we know JavaScript, and let's start playing with some robots. And the other major thing is, when I think about diversity of thought, especially in fields that are really complex, like robotics, we think a lot about, well, okay, so there are all these people with PhDs and huge government checks writing these amazing software algorithms and, building these vehicles that can drive by themselves and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But there are huge problems that they have, like sensor fusion is a really hard problem to solve. And the whole idea behind sensor fusion is just imagine you are a robot and you have eyes and ears and a nose, and trying to get all of that information tied into one thing to try to determine where you are in the world and what you're doing. You have the same problem with robots, right? You've got cameras, and you've got microphones, and you've got distance and range sensors, and trying to merge all of that information together in a way that says, okay, I know where I am, I know what I'm doing. That's a really hard problem to solve. And sometimes I kind of think about, well, what if as a JavaScript developer, you come in with a completely brand new, fresh understanding of the world. What if with something like Node, which is a single thread language, or platform rather, what if we could solve that problem in a completely different way, like using a different method? So I kind of, from a more academic standpoint, I like this notion of let's throw it all to the wind. Let's do something completely different and try something new and see how it goes.
Okay, so let me see if we can take this apart.
That was a lot.
That was a lot of information. And I think we have about a half an hour to understand it.
Okay.
So I heard you say that, and then this sounded very academic, but sensor fusion is a big problem. So that makes me feel like lots of different disparate and diverse data streams like bumpers and audio and infrared and all the different things that a robot could use to make a determination about what to use next are in dealing with that stream of information, those events, is extremely challenging. And I can only assume that using a relatively low-level language like C would just make that more challenging, and you would presumably rely on the last 20 years of C and robotics libraries to hide that from you.
Right, right.
But I mean, with JavaScript, you've got this eventing model.
Right, exactly. So the thing is, so in something like C or Python, you would have threads, right? You have a multi-threaded environment. And so what you would normally do is you would have each sensor. So let's say you've got a camera pair and you've got a bumper sensor, right? And so that's basically going to help you. Let's say you're a little robot going around a room or a maze. It's going to help you see the wall and feel the wall. So you'd have a different thread stream for bumper information and for, what you're seeing in front of you. And then so trying to basically having those two parallel streams and merging the data together in a way that says, okay, here's what's actually happening in the world. This is where the wall is. That's a pretty difficult problem to solve. Like, do you timestamp it, or, how do you put all the information together? In JavaScript, you have this evented system that basically says, okay, well, I'm only going to take, a little bit of information at a time. So right now, let me talk to all of my sensors. Where are we? Let's talk to all my sensors. Where are we? And try to basically, you could argue, I don't know, and I'm totally just making this up as I go along, but, that's a possibility. What if we just think about the problem in a completely different way? What if we think about it using JavaScript instead of using, C or C++ or Python or something?
So let's get specific. What is JavaScript bringing? Is it the event model? Is it the way that Node thinks about streams of data that brings a different way of interacting with hardware?
I think so. I think that's the big thing. So the way that we do Node bots, let's step back and give some power to our listeners here. Mm-hmm. Right now, kind of the most popular way of starting with node bots is to first say, so you have an Arduino, which is just a nice little microcontroller board that you can get for about $20.
So Arduino is the kind of the preferred way, or this is what the module that you start with is called the Johnny 5 module from the short circuit movies.
Right.
Arduino is assumed.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so we stick with an Arduino for now. They're just really prevalent, fairly cheap, really easy to get your hands on.
Okay.
An Arduino.
Cool.
So you've got an Arduino and you basically load it up with, you use standard Fermata, and you use.
What is Fermata?
Fermata is just kind of like the basic language for the Arduino.
Okay.
And so really right out of the box, you don't even have to actually worry about anything. It comes with standard Fermata by default.
Okay.
But then you hook it up with your USB, plug it into your computer, and you will use Johnny 5, which is a node module, to basically get started. And it's really easy. If you know jQuery at all, mm-hmm. even if you're only just really tangentially familiar with it, you know that you kind of have this selector and then a dot and then some sort of action.
Right.
Right. And so Johnny 5 is really similar in that you say, let's say you're, instead of selecting an element on your page, you're selecting a sensor or an actuator. And the difference between a sensor and actuator is a sensor is something that lets you see what's in the world. So a camera or, a bumper sensor or something like that. And then an actuator is something that you put out into the world. So a motor or a servo or an LED.
Okay.
So you basically say, all right, well, let's say I have an LED and you plug it into your board. We can talk about that in another second or something. But you plug it in and then in your code, you can just say LED.blink, right? And you will it'll turn on and turn off. Okay. Or you can have it. So it's something where it's like really easy. Like you just have this, you have a selector kind of, which is like your, the piece that you're using. And then you have an action that, so servo.blink or sorry, led.blink or servo.move. And then you can put in arguments like move it 20 degrees. So you just say servo.move 20.
Okay. So let's break that down. I'm mm-hmm. looking at the nodebots.io site. And okay. We go and we say require Johnny Fives. We bring in that library.
Mm-hmm.
And then we say five.board and we make a new instance of board. And presumably that represents the actual Arduino board that I'm looking at.
Right.
And then just like we say document ready, we can say board ready. When the board's ready, then do mm-hmm. some stuff. Presumably there's some initialization that happens and that's why we need a ready.
Yes.
And then I'm looking at some code here that says 5.led 13, like you could have an LED sitting on pin 13. I like that. I like right. that it's not trying to hide the board for me. You know, there's right. general purpose IO and there's pins. Mm-hmm. And if the pin's labeled 13, the code can say 13. It's nice and clean. 5.led.strobe or .blink or .whatever.
Right.
So it really is that straightforward. That's really a testament to the Johnny 5 library almost more than it is to Node itself.
It is. And so the person behind Johnny 5 is a good friend of mine, Rick Waldron, who's actually on the board of jQuery. He's one of those guys who's helping push JavaScript forward. So you can kind of see you can see jQuery in this and all of his experience. And he's really, really made an effort to just make this as easy as possible to just get started. And what's beautiful is this little example that you're seeing on nodebots.io, you can actually go even deeper, right? Like instead of just 13, you can actually send in a JSON object and you'd say pin 13 and I want it to be, so at least for the LED, it's not as exciting, but for like a servo, you can say, I want it to go clockwise or counterclockwise. I want it to do, so you can send in like an object, a JSON object and really define what that whole thing is.
So phrased differently, when mm-hmm. I say, you know, make a new motor or make a new servo, I can pass in basically an anonymous hash table of name value pairs, which are all the parameters that I want to load it up with, all the behaviors.
Exactly.
As a payload. It's almost like a big optional parameters list.
Right. Exactly. So in JavaScript, as opposed to some other languages, instead of having a comma separated list, while you can do that mm-hmm. in JavaScript, if you have a very long list, it's generally a little bit more, the practice is a little bit more to send in a hash, which it's a JSON object.
Mm-hmm.
And that has all that information, but in one parameter as opposed to say up to a million or whatever.
Yeah. You know, and that's actually a really interesting point that's worth kind of like going over again that like, thinking about me as a primarily C# developer and one that's been doing it for, you know, 10 years of C#, we would have these extremely long, operator overload kind of things, method overloads where we'd have like one of seven, you know, and then towards the end of the this comma, this comma, this, it would just go to hell with all due respect. It would just be like, okay, just take an object. I have no idea what you want from me. And it's a mess to program. It's a mess to use. And it was all in this idea that we would try to support IntelliSense. But then JavaScript, jQuery, jQuery plugins have this idea of passing in a JSON object and saying, here's my payload. If it's there, use it. If it's not, use a smart default.
Right.
It's a much more elegant way of kind of like setting up a state machine than a whole pile of overloads.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm looking here at the Johnny 5 library. You can get this, of course, up at GitHub at Rick Waldron's site. He's got servos and motors and sonar and claws and all this stuff. Now, these make an assumption, of course, that you're using an Arduino, but if I'm going to do something like a claw, Is this a specific physical object I have to buy? How do I reconcile what the code does versus what the hardware I happen to have is?
Right. So most of these things on the Johnny 5 repo are things that other people have done with whatever they have.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny 5 itself is just a, it's like a base system. So you mm-hmm. can really build whatever you want. Now, yes, you can go online and buy a claw, or if you want to be super hackery, you can print your own if you have your own 3D printer.
Well, that's just showing off, actually.
I'm just saying.
If
that's the sort of person you are, you could do that. Or you could just say, you know what, I'm not going to do a claw. I'm just going to have an LED while I, you know, wait until I get a claw or something like that. But certainly, you can do whatever you want. It's just about it. Really, I like to think about Johnny Five as the Legos needed for your larger Lego project.
So then presumably I could come at any point and I could add Johnny5.arm and have that be my own thing.
Absolutely. There's actually a, I believe there's a sensor. So you could create your own, it's super extensible in the sense that you could create your own claw function, mm-hmm. And then just have like a claw dot on, claw dot off, or open or close, or, claw dot lift if you wanted to, that basically has all the functionality that says, I'm going to open my claw, reach for the can, close the claw around the can and pick up the can or something like that, assuming you have a claw that picks up soda cans or something.
Is Node fast enough on an Arduino, or is it an Arduino thing that might prevent you from doing something like video recognition and having it recognize that there's a can there and then picking it up?
Right. So it's important to note that the code does not necessarily run on Arduino itself. So the way that it works is you have Node running on your machine, so on your on your personal computer, and then you use a USB cable to send commands. So the way it works is you've got Johnny 5,
mm-hmm. which
is a library on Node, and Johnny 5 goes through and talks to Node Fermata, which is the Node kind of wrapper around Fermata, that basically then turns all of the Node stuff that you've written in Johnny 5 and turns it into Fermata calls. And then the Fermata calls are sent across the wire to Arduino, and that's kind of translated into Arduino code. And then that all kind of turns on and off different pins, etc.
Okay, so the Arduino isn't the brain, it's the nervous system.
Exactly. And so if you wanted to do if you wanted to have object recognition with some
or
sort of
connect
camera
or something,
or
like
connect
that.
Or something like that, right? You would probably actually not connect that to your Arduino. You would probably connect that to your computer, and then you would use other libraries to kind of connect everything together and have it all flow. So, mm-hmm. So what some people are doing actually is connecting Raspberry Pis to their Arduinos and having everything run off of the Pi. And then that way, because the Raspberry Pi is like this little credit card sized computer.
It's fair to point out that a Raspberry Pi actually has some oomph to it and can do some work, while an Arduino is really slow.
It's dumb. It's literally
it's
just,
well, yeah.
it's an IO, just on, off, turn it on, off, turn this pin on, turn it off, stuff like that.
I'm realizing we don't have, I was worried about the Arduino's feelings, but ultimately I don't really care what Arduino
thinks.
It's a machine. Although, if it had, if I start to anthropomorphize, this really cute robot, I'm going to feel sad. But the Arduino isn't powerful enough to run Node. So this is an interesting point, and this is a real interesting philosophical architectural decision that you've made here, is you're saying, we love doing Node, and we have these really powerful computers, and it's okay to have them, at least while we're doing our testing, tethered with a USB cable. Because some people might say, oh, we got all this way into the podcast, and there's like a giant desktop computer, and I can only get the robot as far as USB reaches?
Right. Well, so the solutions to that are severalfold. Number one, use a really, really long USB cable. number two, get yourself a nice mini laptop, like a MacBook Air or one of those, tiny 10-inch laptops. Mm-hmm. Or Rick has actually been working on using having it wireless. So you could basically you have two boards. You have Arduino One that has a
Zigbee.
Exactly. And then you
Zigbee is, by the way, Zigbee is sometimes called Z-I-G-B-E-E, but it's like tiny Bluetooth, maybe?
It's more like a radio. I think of it more as a radio instead of a Bluetooth. But, you know, the idea is still the same. You basically have, you're basically just sending all of your Johnny5/Fermata code over the air to your other robot. And so I've actually seen it in action. So you can have your little robot running around separately.
So it's kind of like a wireless serial port.
Yes.
Okay, so I have a question, and I haven't done this before in the show. I'm going to actually take my headphones on. I'm going to run 5 feet over there, and I'm going to show you something, and I want you to tell me if I can make it a robot. Hang on.
Okay.
You can entertain the people.
All right. So I would like to say that coming up in December, if this is something that really interests you, in December we have RobotsConf, which is a poly language conference. So whether you're a .NET or a Ruby or a Python or a JavaScript or anything else sort of developer, and you want to kind of bridge the gap between software and hardware and start hacking away, it's a 2-day conference in Amelia Island, Florida. It's amazing. I have a really awesome discount code. So if that's something that interests you, definitely take part. Robotsconf.com. The discount code is Polybots, PolyBots. So it's not just NodeBots. It's any language bot, PolyBots. And Scott will put that in the show notes, I'm sure.
Very cool. So yeah, now you're like a co-host. This is good. All right. So check this out. So we're on Skype. So I'm holding this up. I've got this robot that I got at roboticsconnection.com.
Okay.
And it's kind of this, it looks like an orange trapezoid, and it's got really awesome, like, again, I know nothing about electronics, but I know it has really awesome wheels.
Yes.
And it has a cool wireless antenna thing and a giant 9-volt battery.
Okay.
And, but it is discontinued.
Okay.
I can't find any information about it. All I know is that it has a light when I turn it on, and it has a bunch of control ports and stuff like that. I don't think that's an Arduino inside it. It's just some thing that robotsconnection.com made.
Right.
But I don't know anything about soldering or, like, I don't have a multimeter, let's say.
Yeah.
I think that we go to Goodwill sometimes and we find a dead robot and we want to bring it back to life. My 5-year-old desperately wants to fix this. How would I go and take a robot of unknown origin here and potentially get this thing to move if I don't know about it? I don't know much. Like, would I just get an Arduino and start seeing if I could get a motor to move?
I would say so. So depending on how attached to it you are, I mean, that's a great looking chassis. So
that's what, So you've just said basically everything is useless but the chassis.
Well, no,
it even has an eyeball on the front there. You see,
yes.
It's kind of like a
thing. So that sensor, I know you can use that sensor in Johnny 5.
Ooh, okay.
So all you need to do is really just kind of disconnect, like, you know, cut the wires as close to the board as possible, so you have as much, you know, leeway.
Right. Well, everything comes off. They're all in there, just on pressure. So I could take
perfect
it apart completely.
Yeah. So then, you know, start playing around with, definitely start plugging things in. I would definitely recommend starting out with, you know, go to documentation, do whatever, like, do a little bit of research. But if you're on IRC, which I know is totally, you know, 1996 of me to say, but if you're on IRC, there's, we're in Freenode, robot.js, #robot.js. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of us who hang out in there, and a lot of us are perfectly happy to answer questions. So, you know, send some pictures out into the world and ask around. Twitter is a great way to get a hold of different people. We're happy to answer questions anytime. But definitely just start. So the biggest thing I think software people have that they're scared about, which is a total misnomer to me. I mean, software people are perfectly willing to spend 6 hours in the middle of the night with this brand new idea, and they'll just hack away on code and have something the next day, you know, like they'll have like a web page and all this stuff. And you're like, whoa, you did this in 6 hours. But as soon as they see hardware, they're like, oh my God, what if I break it?
Well, yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. I will spend days and days and days trying to get a Bootstrap template to look perfect, but right. I don't want to shock myself. Like, I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, well, I know it's got great motors because they're heavy,
yeah.
but I'm going to totally shock myself and then I'll be dead and they'll find my body and they'll like, what yeah. happened?
No, but see, here's the other thing, right? Like, as long as you focus on some really basic stuff. So first of all, if you found that at Goodwill, I mean, hypothetically, so a lot of this stuff is not that expensive. And if you really want to, you know, be careful in terms of your money and your, you know,
life,
internal systems, whatever. Yeah. Life.
your internal systems.
Yeah.
I just don't want to shock myself. These motors look really
right.
awesome.
I know. So what you could do is you could just go online, go to SparkFun, get the SparkFun Inventors Kit. And it comes with a couple of teeny little motors that with it, it doesn't take very much voltage. It won't hurt you. You could literally like stick it to your tongue and it won't hurt you that much.
I'm glad that you know that.
Sounds super scary. But the point is that just, you should just experiment. It's really not that dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Like the most you're putting into your system is like 9 volts. I mean, coming out of your USB, if you don't even add any batteries and you're just using your Arduino, you're not even going to get a full 5 volts out of your USB hooked up to your Arduino.
Yeah. It's
so
a half
you're
an
not going to hurt yourself.
Okay.
And it's okay to break stuff. Like a resistor costs, I think, like half a penny or something. Like you buy 50 resistors for like $2. It's not that expensive at all. Just start playing around, start figuring things out, ask questions, ask lots and lots of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Soldering can be a little scary at first, but once you get it, you like, I love doing workshops with people and showing them how to like light an LED. And I feel like Prometheus bringing fire to the people, you know, like it's just, it's amazing. People are like, oh my God, I can turn on lights. And you think it's silly, but it's really
yeah.
powerful because then as soon as I do that, I'm like, okay, here are a bunch of motors and things, go forth. And then people will build just the most amazing stuff. So yes, all I have to say is try it. Go ask me questions.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
People build stuff and you go to their house and see their garage and there's like, it's strewn about with like half done robots. How many robots have you built where they're in your life still? Like, you know, I was watching the beginning of Back to the Future and the very first Back to the Future, Marty comes in to Doc Scott's, or Doc Brown's office, and like the alarm goes off, and this kind of whole Rube Goldbergian thing where the robot makes toast for him and feeds the dog. Do you have any robots in your life that are like getting you a soda?
No, not right now. So the thing is that having robots that bring you sodas is a really hard problem to solve. It's super hard. I mean, if you think about it, like we take for granted the fact that we're able to balance, right? Balance is such a hard problem to solve. We take for granted that we can see. Computer vision is hard. We know where we are in our house. State estimation and understanding your environment is a really hard problem to solve. So just those basic things, right? And now you have to think about, okay, well, now I want this robot to go from where I am now all the way over to the kitchen, open the refrigerator, pick up a soda. And it's not just as simple as go get me a soda. It's, you know, go 3 steps forward, turn right, go 17 steps forward, turn left.
Don't trip on any Legos on the way.
Don't trip on anything. Open the door, step back, like look at your refrigerator. Where is the soda? So you have to find it. And then you have to like, you know, put your arm out. And then it's not just grab the soda. It's open your claw, find the soda,
yeah.
like put the soda in their claw, close the claw, come back. Like all of those are little problems.
Yeah. And any one of those has even deeper problems. Like how much pressure do you put on the claw? And what if you're crushing it? What if you picked some hot sauce instead of a soda and on and on and on?
Exactly. There's this, there's actually a video on YouTube. There's this company called Willow Garage and they have this robot called the PR2. And I think Willow is actually slowly disappearing and the PR2
is
just continued.
Down.
Yeah, which is too bad. But there is this, the YouTube video still exists. And you can actually see this robot. And they've basically, they show it at like 6x speed. And it still takes like 10 minutes for this robot to go from one end of the office over to the refrigerator, pick up a soda and come back. And it's just like, so it takes like half an hour for this robot to go all the way over and come all the way back.
Yeah. I think even the laziest of us would eventually just get up and go and get the soda.
I mean, if you had to wait 30 minutes for your robot to bring you the soda or just, you know, get up yourself and take 30 seconds, it's hard. But they're coming, right? I mean, we have robots who vacuum for us, and we have robots that mop for us, and we have robots that clean our pools and clean out our gutters. And so it's coming. The where I'm working right now, I work at a company called Sauce Labs, and we're working on robots that will test your mobile apps for you. So we're doing a lot of really cool things. Robots are not just the whimsical fun things of once upon a time. They're actually going to be really useful for a long time coming forward.
Well, then it may actually be that we won't end up with robots that can balance and walk around. It seems that node copters and these quadcopters are actually much easier to program and control. We can fly something and have it hover more easily than we can make it simply walk on 2 feet. We may end up having a node copter go over, open the fridge, and then fly me a soda before we'll have one that can walk over there.
Absolutely. Or even better, you just have one robot whose entire job it is to open the refrigerator, grab the soda, and close the refrigerator. And then you have the node copter pick up the soda from that robot and then deliver it to you. So you don't even have to have one robot that does everything.
And this is the problem, because now in my mind, I can see the solution. The robot soda arm will live in the fridge. So it will actually push the fridge from the inside out.
Ah.
And then an arm will extend out of the fridge. So the fridge will offer the soda up. See? This is all like law of Demeter and everything like that, right? So now I'm trying to figure out, you know, single responsibility principle. It is, there's one robot to open the door, one to extend the soda, the node copter then flies over there.
Right.
And then all I have to do is make sure it doesn't hit the children as it comes.
Absolutely. And, you know, that should be fine. Just make sure that it flies at a high enough height that your children could, you know, be standing and it won't, you know, hit them. Sounds good, Scott. I think you should go to it, and I'll see you in a couple of months. Look forward to seeing because now I know you're just going to sit there
I'm
be working on it.
Yeah, I've got to figure out how there has to be a way for me to get a soda. Well, I really appreciate you sharing this this passion with us, and give me a bunch of links. We'll put them at the show notes, and of course we've got a special code for people who want to go to the conference. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's as always, it's super fun. Anytime you want to talk about robots, holler at me on Twitter. Anytime.
Very cool. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.